This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW, because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour, the boots that turn grocery aisles into runways, and all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between, because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Oh my God, it's his time of year. I mean, mock champion multiple times. He's got his first Washington mock draft out. Ben Standing does. Put it out this morning. We'll get to some of the picks here in a moment. I actually really like your second round pick projection. Ben joins us, Standing, that is, at Ben Standing on Twitter, writes for The Athletic, has a podcast called Last Man Standing. He's with us every Monday and Friday as our Washington Commanders Team 980 Kevin Sheehan Show insider, and he's with us right now. So not the same as it's been the last few years in terms of the drama over your mock drafts, but probably more challenging because you can't make a pick until number 29, so it really opens up the possibilities. So tell me about the process that landed your first mock draft 1.0 for Washington.
Yeah, I mean, you know, as we've discussed, I'm way behind my usual process because this team decided to keep us all busy for
no excuses. Play like a champion here.
No, I'm with. Look, the season just ended. The mock is up. But I'm just saying, we're trying to catch up. I mean, honestly, for me, like, this is more the exercise of like, okay, if we go this position here, then, you know, what does it look like there as best I can tell? And obviously free agency comes first and all that good stuff. We know the positions of need. This is a draft that it appears to be pretty loaded on the defensive line. And obviously, you know, we get it. Like, protecting Jayden Daniels is top of mind for everybody, and they've got to get probably another offensive tackle somewhere. But I went with defensive end here and then found some other offensive linemen down the road and tried to figure out how to get some playmakers too. But there's a lot of need for this team, and that's some positions are not as nearly as good as others. This is not a good year for receivers, and it's not great for offensive line per se. But, you know, you got to try to address needs, and that's kind of what the exercise is, to start looking at, okay, if we do this, then what does it mean going forward?
All right. Well, I'm not going to give away the whole thing. I want people to read it on The Athletic. But let's share with everybody, if you don't mind, who you landed on as Washington's first-round pick at number 29.
Yeah, so this is a good example, I think, of, like, there is nothing settled yet on the outside when it comes to rankings. Nick Scourton, a defensive and from Texas A&M, it looks like a good example. If you look at, like, sort of an aggregate of, like, all the places he's picked in the draft, he's somewhere around 27, 28. So here he goes, 29. We're talking about a 280-pound lineman who is, you know, a monster against the run. He had 10 sacks 2 years ago when he was at Purdue, down to 5 last year. He's not like the, wow, this guy is just going to be coming off the edge and getting after the quarterback. But for a team that was just so miserable against the run last year, I kind of leaned in to that for now. But he's also a guy that, like, if you look at some rankings, he's below, he's below that. And I can imagine he's below 29 into the second round. And I can imagine that he doesn't seem like he has the same sort of like edge rusher upside as guys we want to think about. But, you know, he also seems like the kind of competitor that these guys are interested in. And again, the need itself is pretty important. And, you know, they've got to do better with pass rushing as well. But like I said, he gives you a little bit of that as well.
Yeah, the Shamar Stewart, who's Texas A&M's true number one prospect as an edge pass rusher, is an electrifying kind of speed guy as a pass rusher. Skarton's different. I'm curious as to the players that you were close to giving to Washington at 29.
I mean, obviously, you know, we mentioned offensive line, receiver. The receiver, as I said, this is not a really deep group at all. You know, last year there were three receivers picked in the top, what, six? Last year, right? This year there may only be three picked in the whole first round, and it's kind of thin. But one guy who might sneak in is Matthew Golden out of Texas. He's a guy that really kind of came on last year. Big playability. He seems to be having, you know, based on just wherever you've been looking the last couple of weeks, there seems to be some momentum with pushing him towards the first round. Not like he's not a tall guy, sort of a little bit like framed like some of the receivers already on the roster, but, you know, just makes plays. And, you know, again, he may be there at the end of the first round. And then there's a bunch of offensive linemen that could be in play there. Donovan Jackson from Ohio State, the guy who's sort of in that late first, early second range, has ability to play tackle and guard. Obviously, it depends on how Washington were to see him. There seems to be a history here of drafting guys to play tackle and moving them to guard. So who knows? But, you know, we get the offensive tackle need, but if they decide, hey, we're going to keep Andrew Wiley and Brandon Coleman is, you know, we're going to stay with that project at left tackle, then, you know, I don't have, if somebody has the versatility to play both, that's not position flex. I don't want to hear talk about that, but, you know, they're going to need somebody to replace Sam Cosmi. At least probably for, you know, the first few weeks of the season, I would think. So having somebody that could be versatile and play both spots, it could be a good way to go. You know, start him at guard, and then, you know, even if Wiley stays, get him ready to play tackle the following year.
You know, there's a lot. You've mentioned wide receiver. I'm just curious, Luther Burden from Missouri or even an Igbuka from Ohio State, could they be there at 29? Seven, by the way, is the answer to the number of wide receivers taken in the first round last year. But yeah. Does Luther Burden make it to 29? Did you look at that?
Yeah, I mean, I played it out, you know, as I do. It was my way of getting more and more familiar with both the prospects and the team needs. I had both of those guys going earlier rough first round. So I had them both going earlier. Golden, I had going top second, and he was, I think, maybe the first pick in the second, and he was the number four player. You know, there'll be some receivers if they want to wait. It just depends on the level of urgency. And again, this is where, you know, the free agency is going to be a huge deal. This is not a great receiver class in free agency in terms of the top end. It's like T. Higgins and a big drop, but you can still find guys like a Keenan Allen and, you know, if you want to spend, I mean, a little bit more, Chris Godwin's out there coming off injury. So there's some guys, there's not going to be some big home run names. So we'll see if Washington goes down that route or if they decide, hey, we're going to get Jaden a younger target high in the draft.
I think I haven't spent a lot of time looking at the draft or studying it yet. I usually wait for Doc's, you know, big board to come out, Doc Walker's big board to come out, and then I really get involved. But this is, I believe, right, Denton and Ben, this is perceived to be a pretty good running back draft, correct?
Yeah, it is very much so. There could be, it's going to be, you know, we know how things get very trendy. You know, in sports, if something works, now everybody wants to do
right.
It. And because there are a decent amount of running backs, you know, I think in general the rules apply. Teams don't want to spend too high of a pick on running backs. Or, you know, but at the same point, teams also might be like, hey, look what the Eagles just did. You know, look, the Lions, you know, the running game was a huge part of what they were doing, et cetera. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's more than two running backs picked in the first round. You know, there should be opportunities for Washington to get one kind of almost anywhere they pick, you know, the first, you know, three, four, or five rounds.
Well, this will be the last pick I ask you to disclose because there are several more that Ben has projected, including important ones. But second round pick for Washington, you have them selecting?
Yeah, well, again, you know, if we're just talking what's Ben's philosophy to roster building, this isn't it. It'll probably go offensive line here after taking D-line in round one. But as I've said, I think they really need to get, but this isn't a big stunner at this point, they've got to get more playmaking on offense, but it doesn't just have to be receiver. You know, Brian Robinson and Austin Ekeler made plays last year, but, you know, not a lot of explosiveness. Robinson didn't develop into a receiver. And, you know, there is a world where neither of them are back next year. I mean, I would assume one would be, but it's possible that they are both, you know, either one of them could be a kept casualty. So I went for somebody who not only was an interesting running back prospect, but somebody I thought would be a really, really good fit with the quarterback, and that's Trevion Henderson from Ohio State.
Yeah.
He's got, you know, he's an excellent pass catcher. He's, you know, explosive moves. He's got that big playability. And, you know, I just think pairing him with Jaden, like, he's not a guy that I would say like is a three down back, but pairing him with Jaden as that sort of pass catching weapon, I just think could be crazy fun, you know, with read options and so on. So, you know, like I said, in a year where running backs are pretty prevalent, I don't know that we get to April that I'm going to be sitting here advocating for a running back, especially depending on free agency. But for now, I just wanted to emphasize, I think they need, it's not just receiver. They've got to get some help. Wherever they can get help on offense, skill players, they should. And I think Henderson would be a lot of fun with Jaden Daniels.
And Denton will remember this, and I'm sure you will too. As a freshman at Ohio State, the hype around Trevion Henderson was obscene. And I think that first game, Denton, who did they play? Minnesota, I think, on like Friday night of Labor Day weekend, his freshman year. And he had, was it Minnesota? It may have been somebody else.
He was Minnesota on a Thursday.
A Thursday night. And he had, you know, like an 80-yard touchdown run. And really, since that freshman year, he didn't develop into the star that I think people projected him to be. Obviously, they added Judkins from Ole Miss this year, but he's still a really good back. It's just kind of interesting, the hype that Trevion Henderson had coming in, the start to his freshman year, and then a bit forgotten over the last 3 years, a little bit. Don't you think, Denton, or not?
That touchdown was actually Mayan Williams, not Trevion Henderson.
On opening night?
Yeah, it was a 71-yarder.
He had a score, though. Maybe it was a catch and a long touchdown run.
Yeah, he had a 70-yard touchdown reception. Yeah.
That was what it was, yeah. I remember I had Minnesota that night. Did not get it done. But he really didn't develop into the superstar in the sport that people thought he was going to be as a freshman.
Yeah, I mean, I think that seems right. You know, I think I just, you know, in this day and age with the way teams use running backs, or at least the way we see some teams use like this one, I just think he could be really fun to see Cliff Kingsbury's game plan if we get him in open space. And like I said, Ekeler made a bunch of plays last year. You know, whether as a pass catcher or a running back, where his shiftiness, you know, really allowed him to get those extra yards after the catch or the carry. But, you know, in general, I just think they got to get more out of that spot. And again, we'll see. Is Ekeler going to be back after the two concussions? You know, he's only got a small guarantee left. If you move on from him, then you got to find somebody like a Henderson type profile in the draft, or, you know, somewhere in free agency. But there's another Ohio State running back in this draft class. So
yeah,
if I'm talking pure disciplined roster building, I'm probably not taking a running back in the second round, especially in a year when there's more guys down the line. But you know, let's have some fun here.
Yeah, I think it's going to be interesting to see how high Ashton Jeanty goes in this draft. To your point about running backs and potential superstar running backs, and, you know, somebody like Dallas at 12, would they actually take, you know, a back in a guy like Jeanty when they have not had a running back in a few years? We're talking to Ben Standing. You also wrote yesterday, How can Commanders catch the Eagles? The playoffs offered suggestions. Give me the number one suggestion from the playoffs on how Washington can catch Philadelphia.
You're right. Well, look, I mean, it's the number one phrase I think people were saying all throughout the playoffs, anytime the Eagles were playing, was like, yeah, you know, yada, 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 but the Eagles have the best roster. And that, you know, yada, 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 but the Eagles are a deeper team. And I think the part that gets overlooked there is like, how did that happen? And it's obvious to say you got to nail the draft, but few teams do it to the rate that the Eagles have done it. You know, since 2020, that first year with Ron Rivera, Washington had five first round picks. And as we know, the only one left is Jaden Daniels. Philly's had six in that stretch. Five of them are still with the team, and all of them are, you know, prominent guys, including three of their defensive line starters, you know, the group that dominated in this game. And then it's not just day one. Like, they're, you know, day two, they get Jalen Hurts, they get Cooper DeJean and other guys. And then just their overall, you know, they had more picks over that span than Washington, and they just had more guys who are still here. Now, you know, this is Adam Peters' wheelhouse as much as anything, is the draft. Clearly, we'd all give Washington's draft an A last year because of Jaden Daniels, and they could have drafted you and me after that. It would have still been an A. But you get Mikey Sanders still, it's another piece. Obviously, Brandon Coleman and Johnny Newton got pretty extensive play, but I think we need to see exactly where they're going here. And then, you know, the back end of the draft, or not the back end, but Sinnott, McCaffrey, and then those other guys, you know, they're all prospects. I get the promise, but we have to see it, right? The Eagles, you know, because they're a few years ahead of Washington, they've been doing it for more, but they're also just nailing it year after year. So, you know, it's obvious, but you got to get the talent right. You got to know how to manipulate the board. You know, look, give them credit. They made the trade up with Washington to get the Cooper DeJean pick. I'm not saying Washington did poorly, but just saying they identified a guy that they wanted and made the move, and that's what you have to do. So how Adam Peters deals with the draft, what he did this year, replicating it would be obviously great, but when you're in the division with Philly, you got to be on your toes because they don't really miss very often.
Talking to Ben Standing, so I read something earlier, and Denton and I talked about it. Aaron Schatz, DVOA Aaron Schatz on ESPN's, like, you know, ESPN NFL experts making projections for next year. And one of the questions was, which team takes a step back in 2025? And Schatz wrote, Washington, when a team pulls off a magical run to the conference championship, despite not being one of the two or three best teams in the conference, you usually see a step back the following season. This is the part, though, that interested me. And when quarterbacks are as good as Jaden Daniels was as a rookie, they usually don't take the step forward that fans expect because they're already very good and there's not much room to improve. And when I read that, I thought to myself, you know, I've said, look, this is the worst team he's ever going to play on. Plus, he'll be in year two as an NFL player with more experience with Cliff Kingsbury. And then I thought, like, where are the areas for him, not the team around him, where are the areas in which he can really improve upon? Like, does he have an area that they sent him home with in the offseason that said, here's the area where we really need you to be much better?
Well, I think to Aaron's point, his point is not wrong. It's just that, like you said, the problem is he's lumping Jaden Daniels in with the standard guy who had a really good rookie season. Whereas with his case, you know, I think we're reasonably – look, he got MVP votes. Whether he should have had more, you know, that's a pretty –
You could argue he should have had more.
No, yeah, absolutely. I think if we didn't know anything that happened previously – right, but just, okay, here's how the year starts, and here's the general sense for each team, he probably would get, he might even have won the thing, because obviously Washington's rise, well, you know, I'm not going to say it was solely on him, but it was very much about him more than, like, the team around him. So, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, even if Jaden Daniels doesn't, quote-unquote, markedly improve next year, okay. I mean, he's still going to be really, really
yeah.
Good. Obviously, there's some decision making, you know, that you can always improve on, and
sure,
you know, he'll have to adjust to whatever the teams are now going to do against him. That was one of the things I also discussed in the in that story you mentioned, and how maybe what the Eagles did to Mahomes is something that Jaden Daniels could start seeing more, perhaps. But whatever. Other than those kind of adjustments, if Jaden Daniels does what he did last year, I wouldn't view it as like a negative. I would view it as he's already a really, really good quarterback, and you know, he's just continuing to play at a high level.
Thank you. Have a good weekend. Watch a lot of hoops. I'll talk to you Monday.
Awesome, man. See ya.
Ben Standing, everybody. Up next, Robbie Hummel from the Big Ten Network, from ESPN, from everywhere. College basketball analyst will join us to talk Terps and more. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
What is Dax, are you?
Tracking all our cars on Carvana Value Tracker on all our devices? Yes, Kristen, yes I am.
Well, I've been looking for my phone for...
In Dax's domain, we see all, so we always know what our cars are worth.
All of them?
All of them. Value surge, trucks up 3.9%.
That's a great offer.
I know. Sell?
Sell.
Track your car's value with Carvana Value Tracker today.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Joining us right now, courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline, is Robbie Hummel. Robbie's one of my favorites. He is an excellent college basketball analyst for Big Ten Network, NBC, Peacock, Fox. He'll actually be on the call tonight of a good one out at Assembly Hall on Fox, UCLA at Indiana. Talk about two-story names going to head-to-head. And Indiana just beat Michigan State the other night. But I was watching you last night. Boy, that Andy Katz was punchy last night, wasn't he? What was going on there?
You know, the studio can be a pretty stale place. Uh-huh. And whenever Mike Hall hosts, I love Mike. Mike is like, he's like a stand-up comedian himself. Like, he has improv background. Every show I do with Mike Hall, I'll give him some absurd word, you know, phrase to get in, and he does it. And he'll do it immediately. Like, he's very gifted in that regard. So that kind of feeds it a little bit. But yeah, Andy was feeling good. And, you know, if you heard a reference to an obscure 80s movie, it's because that would have been in the pregame show. But that was because Mike was talking about it. And I go, all right, get that into the broadcast. So I said, hold on. I'll get you what the movie actually was.
I was Mike watching the pregame because it was right off the women's the game and they held up the start of the game. But I don't remember that being mentioned.
Okay, so it was The Princess Bride, which I've never seen.
Okay.
And it was a movie from the 80s, early 90s. And I also gave him the stipulation, you can't incorporate it with Derek Queen. Because that, you know, Princess Queen, that would be too easy. So long story short, when Mike Hall is hosting, you know, Andy, you never know what you're going to get. I think Andy's been feeling a little bit under the weather. But he certainly upped his energy level. And it was not dull, I will say that. It was not dull.
You guys were having a good time. And look, you had a great game. You know, not that you were. Yep. You guys were in studio last night. You'll be on the call tonight for Indiana, UCLA. And then, Robbie, you'll be back in College Park on Sunday for Maryland and Iowa, 5 o'clock tip at Xfinity Center. I mean, I came on the show today, and just tell me whether or not I've been taking too many gummies here this morning. I think Maryland's actually a sleeper Final Four contender. What do you think?
Yeah, I can get behind that. My one concern, I think, is that Kevin is going to feel like he has to play his starters into the ground. And I think Tafari Gapare being out for the last two games certainly hasn't helped that. And I like Gapare because he can make a three. He's a good athlete. He can guard. I think the role definition, though, on this team is really high level. And it goes back to the portal back in the spring. You know, certainly Kevin Willard looked at his team from last year and said, okay, we have some real weaknesses that must be addressed, shooting being the glaring one, point guard being the other. We've got to replace Jameer Young. He's a great player. But the guys he went out and got, you know you've got Julian Reese coming back. You have to put skill around him. You know you've got Derek Queen coming in. Same thing. Give those guys space to operate. And getting the trio of Selton Miguel and Rodney Rice and Jacoby Gillespie, it's honestly a masterclass in roster construction. My one gripe in your prediction there would be I worry a bit about the bench. But the starting five is awesome. You have dynamic guards. You've got great bigs. Derek Queen is starting to really figure this out. And on top of all that, on top of being a really potent offense, they guard. They really guard you. I think Julian Reese has had a very underrated defensive season.
Oh, yeah.
I think he's been tremendous in terms of how he's guarded. Derek Queen is leading the league in defensive rating. And that's kind of a crazy stat. Because at times teams have hunted him in Nebraska.
No doubt, that
their
shocks
big guy
me.
In the first game went at him, and in Northwestern they were going at him. But I think that's honestly a product of how good the other four guys have been, and it's lifted a freshman who's very talented offensively and is still trying to find his way on the other end of the floor.
Yeah, you know, that Northwestern night, whether it was Barnheiser or Martinelli, I mean, they were hunting him.
Yeah.
That's a surprising stat. I do want to ask you a little bit more about Derek Queen here in a moment. Robbie Hummel is joining us. Maryland last night went to Nebraska, beat Nebraska 83-75. All 83 points scored by Maryland's starting five, not one bench point. Now, their best scorer off the bench, Tafari Gapare, was sick again. Hopefully he's back. But, you know, I was going to ask you, other than bench, because I mentioned that too, and look, once you get to the NCAA tournament, you've got longer timeouts, et cetera, but still, foul trouble could end up impacting them in a one-and-done.
Sure.
What kind of team will give them the most difficulty?
That's a good question. You know, I think that with Maryland, I think a team that doesn't allow them to maybe set their defense, because I do think that, you know, when Maryland is scoring, now you start getting into, they haven't pressed as much this year, but they're able to do that. They can go to their zone. They can go to their man. And look, like, the thing that's good about the Maryland team this year is that even if you have a good defensive team, Maryland has three guys on the perimeter that can go and get you a basket, you know, like they whether it's Gillespie or it's Rice or even Miguel, you know, Miguel can get a little bit wild, but he can also get really, really hot too. So I guess a team that you're looking at that has great individual defenders in terms of maybe just shutting the water off, because then if you don't score, you don't set your defense. Honestly, I think they're built to win in a lot of ways. I just do worry about the fact that this could be a group that over the course of 3 months, you say, well, these guys are averaging 35 minutes a game, the five guys in the starting lineup, because the bench gave them 17 minutes last night.
Yeah.
And does that fatigue eventually roll up over time and really hurt them? You know, that would be my biggest concern. But in terms of style of play, I think they can play a lot of different ways. Yeah, they can force turnovers. They can get you on the offensive glass. They've got dynamic guards. They've got a big in Julian Reese who anchors the defense. They can play in the post. And then you've got Queen who's, you know, going behind the back like he's Yao Ming back in the 2000s. You remember that play? That's what that reminded me of last night. Yao Ming doing that behind the back.
Yeah, I because we've been so immersed with football around here, I haven't watched as much of the rest of the country. And I said to Denton earlier, I said, a team that's super athletic defensively and can switch one through five, and you just said, you know, sort of cut the water off, I don't know that they've played that team yet. And maybe that team resides in the SEC. Maybe that's a Houston. I haven't watched enough of it. But, you know, I know what it looked like a few years ago when they played Bama. Maryland's so skilled, though, and they just are so much more versatile offensively. That's what I was thinking. You know, a super athletic switch one through five kind of a team.
Yeah, I guess, you know, they lost to Marquette early, and Marquette has kind of gone down a little bit these last couple of weeks. Granted, their schedule has been brutal. You know, they played UConn, St. John's, and at Creighton. But that would be an example, right? Like, they're going to bring pressure. Marquette's going to get after you. They're going to hard hedge. Now, they're not a great rebounding team. But, I mean, if you're talking about the elite athletic teams in the SEC, whether it's Auburn or Bama, or, you know, they're also just really good. And you'd be meeting them in, like, the Elite Eight. So it's like, I really like this Maryland team because I think they can play a number of ways.
Talking to Robbie Hummel, Derek Queen for me, and I'm a Maryland guy, he's the best freshman since Joe Smith. Melo Trimble had a great season, no doubt. Derek Queen's going to be a top 10, top 15 pick. Is he going to win freshman of the year in the league? And what overall do you think of him as a college basketball player right now?
Well, I love him. I mean, I saw him for the first time at Purdue, and that's quite the first impression.
That's the last time I think he shot a three.
Yeah, it was. He made a bunch of them that game, a couple. So, you know, just his skill set, you don't see. The handle, the ability to face and play, the ability to pass. He can play with his back to the basket. He just has so much to his game. You know, the offensive glass, I love watching him play. I love the fact that he's been coachable by not just the staff, but also Julian Reese. You know, I've seen multiple times in games where Julian Reese has put his arm around him. I've also seen Julian Reese yell at him at Northwestern. But he's handled it like a pro. And, you know, props to Julian Reese as well for being comfortable with saying, hey, yeah, bring another post-centric guy. Granted, he can play some on the perimeter too. But it's not like they went and got a stretch four. So, I think both sides of that coin, pretty impressive maturity. And then, you know, just the fact that he's continued to stay with it, went through some struggles, wasn't always going his way, but he's come out the other side, and you're right, he's going to be a top 15 pick in the NBA draft. And in terms of freshman of the year, I think it's still to be determined. These last 3 weeks, the schedule makers in the Big Ten, they hit the nail on the head this year, because the teams at the top outside of Maryland are all going to just destroy each other over over the last couple weeks of the season. I don't think you can give freshman of the year to Dylan Harper or Ace Bailey if they're going to get 15th place. You know, okay, they're top five in right. scoring, but I just can't give a first team All Big Ten or a freshman of the year, or and unless you're averaging 30 points a game. If you're playing like Glenn Robinson in his best season at Purdue,
right.
there's a discussion there. But I don't think you can do that with the way their team has played. So I think he's the front runner, but there's so many big games to be played, and I think that will eventually tell us who is the freshman of the year.
Yeah, and the kid from Illinois, too, who's going to be the Lithuanian kid, is going to yep. he's got yep. a chance. Yep. He's in that mix, too, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, yeah. He is. And, you know, those are two probably, in my mind at least, because of Rutgers' struggles as a team, those are the two guys that could win the award.
We're talking to Robbie Hummel. Robbie was a phenomenal college basketball player. And without the injuries, I think a couple of those teams that you were on would have made super deep runs. And it wouldn't have taken Matt Painter until last year to have gotten to a Final Four. But that's another subject. Have you ever seen a player that shot the way Julian Reese shot from the free throw line the last 2 years with a hitch, with all sorts of issues, improve so dramatically?
You know, that's a great question. I've seen guys shoot with a hitch, and I've seen guys kind of get rid of it, but it doesn't mean they make them. So in terms of the improvement, I don't know if I have. And that's a testament to Julian for putting right. the work in. You know, I thought his freshman year, his jumper didn't necessarily look bad. He shot way more threes as a freshman than I think he has probably the other 3 years of his Maryland career. But he developed that hitch, and it got to a point where you're like, all right, this has no chance. You know, it's just from an entirety of the shot, from a mechanic standpoint, you're just not going to make them, because how can you hitch like that and make a fluid jump shot? But clearly he put the time in. You know, I remember going to shoot arounds last year, 2 years ago. Kevin Willard was always working with him and was positive with him, and they clearly found a way to get rid of that this summer. And you always have to respect guys that are willing to address their weaknesses and make them strengths, and to put the time in and to understand how much hard work goes into something like that. I really have a lot of respect for Julian Reese. And I think that from a maturity standpoint as well, he has come a long way. I know he got a tech last night. It seemed like it was pretty weak because he did get pushed in the back and yelled and won. But, you know, he has come a long way from understanding what he needs to do, not fouling. There's a lot of places that Reese has improved, and he's a big reason of why they've been so good this year.
Yeah, you know, just listening to you talk, it's one of the reasons I'm a big fan of yours. I mean, you talked about just Derek Queen's interview last night and how mature it was, and kind of admitting that he had three turnovers and just the way he handled it. And I think, you know, I had Kevin Willard on last week, I think, and I asked him about Julian, and I said there has to be an incredible effort and work commitment, and he said he's the first one in the gym. He's there early mornings working on it, and that's just, you know, that is a maturity thing, because you're right, as a freshman there was a lot of concern in a lot of different areas with Reese. By the way, Robbie, his overall offensive game, forget the free throw shooting, he's able to knock down mid-range shots now. He can put the ball on the floor without looking like kind of an awkward giraffe, like he's got his feet and is everything's together this year. I mean, he's just a much better player, right?
No, I agree. I just think he's improved in a number of ways. And, you know, if you would have told me that he could make the all-defensive team at the start of the season, I'd probably say, yeah, he's probably not going to be on the floor enough because he fouls all the time. He's just gotten better. But he's clearly put the work in, and that's a very respectable thing.
All right, tell me about the teams at the top of the Big Ten. Maryland, unfortunately, the Ohio State loss is going to kind of really hurt them to have a 17-point lead, because they'd be in the hunt for the regular season title with the home games they've got coming up if they had just gotten that one. But who is the best team in the Big Ten right now?
We talked about this last night. Michigan State is trending down. They've got to find a way to get out of this funk from coming back from the West Coast, and it's losing to Indiana the way they went against Indiana's 2-3 zone, which I don't know if Indiana's played like 4% of zone this year, if that. So that they've kind of fallen off there. Wisconsin has a really tough schedule to finish. Honestly, all these teams do, besides Maryland. Everybody else has a really tough road. Michigan, with that win over Purdue, put themselves in a great spot, and their schedule's not easy. You know, they've got to go to Ohio State, Michigan State at home, Nebraska on the road, which Maryland saw how tough that was last night, Rutgers home, Illinois home, they've got Maryland at home, and then Michigan State away. So that's not easy. Purdue's is comparable in terms of the difficulty that they have. I'm going to say that I still think Purdue is the best team, even with the 2-point loss. You know, if you kind of take a step back to 30,000 feet, only 3 weeks ago they beat that Michigan team 30. By 30.
Yeah.
So the recency bias, I don't think, can be one of those things where it's like, oh my God. I just keep coming back to the fact that Purdue is going to have two guys that are first team All Big Ten. Braden Smith's the best point guard in the country. Trey Coffin Wren, I think, is pretty close to being a lock to make that first team with the season that he's had. And I also look at their, you know, just their pedigree. They've won two straight Big Ten championships. They played the national championship game last year. Until someone takes that from them, I don't think it's wise to pick against them. And I know their schedule's tough, but the fact is everybody's is here that's in that mix. And, you know, somebody might. Michigan could win. Michigan State still is in a position that they could if they win these games. It's a massive game Tuesday. Michigan State-Purdue is a huge game. But until Purdue is beaten, I just don't feel great about picking somebody else.
By the way, for those that haven't seen Michigan play, Michigan's got a player, Danny Wolf, who is a 7-foot transfer from Yale, who is truly one of the more unique players I've watched. And I watched the Purdue game, you know, the other night. That was a hell of a basketball game. How many teams, Robbie, have a 7-footer that's actually calling for the ball screen out on the perimeter? This guy's like a 7-foot point guard. He's got to be a high lottery pick at this point, right?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Defensively, I think teams feel like there could be some warts there, although I saw him in the tournament last year. I was in Spokane with Lisa Byington and Steve Smith, and we did the Yale-Auburn game. And actually, he was okay in that game. It was John Pulakidas who had 28, and they upset Auburn. He has incredible skill. For someone that's 7-foot, and I saw him at Wisconsin this year, and he was like speed dribbling up the sideline, behind the back, change of direction. They just pick and rolled the Badgers to death. Purdue did a pretty good job in both the games at just switching it and being physical and blowing it up. And I wonder if that's what teams are going to try to do going forward with Michigan. But, yeah, I've seen nobody in college basketball. You know, you think of Kevin Durant is 7 foot tall. He's obviously calling for ball screens. He's one of the best scorers in the history of basketball. So the list is pretty short, you know, of those types of guys that aren't in the NBA that are making plays like that. He rebounds, he plays hard, he's going to play in the NBA. I don't know if he's a lottery pick per se, but he's got a lot of ability.
All right, last one on the Big Ten. Do they have a national champion in the conference?
I don't think so. I just think, you know, the teams at the top, and I would say Duke from the ACC, although they're very young. The SEC seems to be head and shoulders above everybody, especially with the way they won in the non-conference. It's going to be interesting to see when the selection committee reveals their seedings here this Saturday, what that shows and how many SEC teams are on that 1-2 line. I think the Big Ten, the depth is a killer. Like when I played in the Big Ten, you'd look at the bottom and be like, all right, you know, this team is 2-15 or 2-16. As long as we are pretty locked in and show up, we'll probably win. You know, there was a couple get-right games. That doesn't exist. I mean, Maryland went to Washington and lost, and Washington has certainly kind of hit the skids, and Penn State with their injuries, that's hurt them, Northwestern, same thing. But when the teams were healthy, nobody was bad. You know, there was not one bad team, and then you throw in the fact that the Big Ten has such great atmospheres for a lot of these places. It's not an easy league to play in. So I don't think that the teams at the top necessarily are great, but there's a lot of good teams, and that makes for a league that, man, you just look at every team in the conference. You look at starting in January, man, there's a 5-game stretch where let's just, man, I hope we go 2-3. And that's got to be a pretty daunting feeling for any coach.
Yeah. We get number 1 and number 2 tomorrow afternoon, Auburn and Alabama. Who do you like and why?
I just think Auburn is head and shoulders above everybody else. I saw Bama early. I had him at Purdue. And Mark Sears is a great player. I know he's been through a little bit of ups and downs, but is playing better. Bama's certainly scary because of the way they play. Shoot a bunch of threes, play incredibly fast, get shots at the rim. Nate Oates is like the analytics darling of basketball. But I do think from seeing Auburn last year, so many guys from that team that lost to Yale are back. And we kind of went through this in my time at Purdue where I thought that losses helped us the following season. You know, my sophomore year, we lost the game to Duke with John Shire and Kyle Singler and all those guys. Where it really showed this is what an elite college basketball team is. This is what how hard you have to play to be a team that can go to the Final Four. And I think in terms of Auburn last year, they're a high seed. They get punched in the face. Chad Baker-Mazzara gets ejected. They lose to Yale in the first round of the NCAA tournament. Well, all those guys come back. And then you add Aiden Holloway and you add talent around it. But I think the hunger, you know, it's kind of like Purdue last year. We saw how hungry those guys were. Man, they were winning NCAA tournament games and not even celebrating. They were winning games in the conference at Illinois, at, you know, massive games, and not really even reacting to it because all that mattered to them was making the Final Four and getting to the national championship game. And I think Auburn is a team that's similar, on a mission, hungry, motivated, talented, and cohesive. And that is a dangerous mix. So I'll go Auburn because of that.
Iron Bowl and hoops tomorrow. Crazy the way the sport has flipped. Yep. And the SEC's become what it's become. Love your work. Yeah. Really appreciate the time, as always. Have a good trip up here for the weekend. Hopefully it's one of those good crowds because you know what it can be. Sometimes it's that way and sometimes it isn't. But this team's good enough. I think the home games they've got left will be good environments for sure. Thanks, Robbie.
Totally agree. Yep, no problem, Kevin. Thanks.
Robbie Hummel, everybody. We'll finish up with a little bit more of Denton's news. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980, theteam980.com. We're free and live on the Odyssey app. We'll finish up with a few things. Denton did not have a chance to get to in his news. I read this earlier this morning. Last night, I guess the last games before the All-Star break in the NBA. And the Warriors beat the Rockets 105-98. For those of you that aren't paying attention, Houston's actually really good. And Golden State is kind of like one of those teams right now that would, you know, barely qualify for the play-in round. But they traded for Jimmy Butler recently. And with Butler, they are a 3-1 basketball team. And the people, you know, Draymond Green, Steph Curry, Steve Kerr are going nuts over Jimmy Butler. This is the guy that basically walked out on Miami multiple times and forced himself into this trade. And for a while, Denton, we didn't think that maybe, but we thought Pat Riley might be stubborn enough to say, yeah, no, we're not going to trade you. Draymond Green said, after playing four games with Jimmy Butler, quote, he's a franchise changer. He's done that everywhere he's gone, and he's helping revitalize what we got here. The belief amongst this team now that he's arrived, as opposed to what it was before he got here, it's night and day. Steve Kerr said, quote, about Butler, who last night finished with 19 points, eight rebounds, four assists, but they had let a big lead slip to two. Then he came back into the game, and they went on a 9-2 run. Kerr said about Jimmy Butler, quote, Jimmy, he's a real deal. I mean, just a complete basketball player, methodical, under control all the time, plays at his own pace, never turns it over, sees the game, and then can get to the line frequently. Great closer, not in the traditional sense where he's going to be Kevin Durant and make four straight mid-range jumpers, but it's more of a complete game. Get to the line, make the right pass, get somebody an open look, get a defensive stop, get a rebound. He's a fantastic player. Could Golden State, with the combination of Draymond, Jimmy Butler, and Steph Curry, with no big man to speak of, right? No size on that team. Could they be a threat to win a couple of series when they get there with that experience?
Yeah, you don't need a big guy to win in the NBA.
Need a defensive stopper, typically.
Yeah, I mean, Looney's fine. Trayce Jackson-Davis is fine.
He doesn't even play. The other guy plays. The Boston College kid is the one that plays.
Well, he can be fine. You don't need a big guy if you got Steph and Jimmy, honestly. That's how the NBA works nowadays. If you can shoot threes, you'll be all right. Because, like, look who else is in the West. These guys aren't, dominating big forces. These are a lot of guys that, I mean, Jokic is a dominating big guy.
Good enough defensively? Let me ask it that way.
No, I don't think they're good enough defensively, but they're good enough offensively. And if you're going to force someone that can't get into a shootout, then you're in a good spot.
Jimmy Butler's had such an interesting career, man. You know, he is not a regular season, you know, superstar. But my God, when you get into the games that matter, look at his scoring average in the postseason with Miami. The last 2 years, 27 and 27.4. I mean, and Steph, obviously, and Draymond have been there. Yeah, that's an interesting trade. Because right now, the Doncic-Anthony Davis trade is going to turn out to be nothing for Dallas. Anthony Davis is out for a while. By the way, they've lost a bunch of players, including Gafford for a while. The West is going to be pretty wild when we get to the postseason. All right, that's our NBA talk.
That's a good NBA talk for the week.
Is that enough?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So, just want to end with this, because I read this, that Kellen Moore is the new head coach in New Orleans. I guess you said it was Grant who reported from Super Bowl week that New Orleans wanted to hire Cliff Kingsbury, and Kingsbury essentially had no interest in the job. That's correct. Great for us. He's not made a commitment to Derek Carr as the team's quarterback. By the way, that's fine. I mean, Derek Carr is, I think, done. He's never been one of my favorites to begin with. But that's a place where some of these veteran quarterbacks could land. But you said something to me yesterday that just doesn't make sense. And that is, well, they'll just go with Spencer Rattler. Nobody views Spencer Rattler as a starting NFL quarterback, do they?
Well, the Saints might, but like that was the point of what I was saying. You're going to kick the tires on Spencer Rattler. If he's not good, you're in a position where you could draft the future, because there's nobody that's available that's going to be the future of your franchise this offseason. It's a bunch of old
This teams. Is not going to be a good year for quarterbacks. I mean, it's, you know, Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders. Next year's draft has Arch Manning in it, right? It'll have Beck in it. It'll have who else?
Oh, well, let's take Carson Beck out of there.
I don't want to take Carson Beck out of there. I actually see an NFL quarterback in Carson Beck. I actually do.
I'll take your word for it. You have Arch. Nico I is a guy that's going to get a lot of looks.
Oh, he stinks.
Wait, you think you wouldn't take Nico I, but you would take Carson Beck?
He doesn't see the field. Not yet. We'll see what he looks like next year. I love his athleticism. Don't get me wrong.
I'm taking Nico I over Carson Beck.
Well, Drew Aller. That's your opinion. I think Carson Beck actually looks more like an NFL quarterback. I'm not saying a star quarterback at all. By the way, where did he transfer to?
Miami.
But I think he's an NFL quarterback for sure. And, you know, obviously the season that he had, he dropped significantly, so much so that he's transferring from Georgia to Miami. But I would not be surprised if he ends up being an NFL quarterback. Nico I had no quarterback vision or presence at all in that season. He's a great athlete. But who are we missing?
Drew Aller, Lenora Sellers, the kid from LSU, Garrett Nussmeier.
Oh, yeah.
Your boy Miller Moss.
So next year, other than Arch, it's not a great quarterback draft either, correct?
Well, no. People love Nico I. You don't like Nico I. People love Nico I because the assumption is that he is going to get better when it comes to seeing the field in year number two. Remember,
that's a big assumption.
It is a big assumption, but that's what you play the games for. Yeah. Drew Aller, Lenore Sellers is probably going to jump up boards a little bit if South Carolina is good again. Sam Levitt at Arizona State.
Love Sellers. We got to go. I'm looking at the clock. Thanks. Good week, everybody. Good to have Denton back from the Super Bowl. Chris Russell next.
Ah, can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
This President's Day, upgrade the look of your home without breaking your budget. Save up to 50% site-wide on brand new window treatments now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com, the number one online retailer of custom window treatments, is the better way to give your home the presidential treatment. Blinds.com makes it easy with free virtual consultations on your schedule and samples delivered directly to your door, fast and free. Choose from trending woven wood shades or upgrade to motorized. Blinds.com has everything and more, all with upfront pricing and no hidden fees. Need help with installation? Blinds.com can handle it for you. Or DIY with expert guidance from our design pros. With over 25 million windows covered and our 100% satisfaction guarantee, you can count on Blinds.com to deliver results you'll love. Shop Blinds.com's President's Day Mega Sale right now and save up to 50% site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Up to 50% off site-wide at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.